Today, Marshall Thornton tells us what to expect after his Boytown series ends, and Justine talks to us about a guy named Popper Jack.
Welcome to Gay Mystery Authors with Brad Shreve, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. Plus, Justine Adamek is here with her weekly recommendation.
Our guest today is Marshall Thornton, but first, Justine, I believe you have a book to recommend.
I do. I have Murder at the Paisley Parrot, a Marshall James novel by Mark McNeice.
I want to say one thing about Mark McNeice.
Okay.
When I was reading and just learning about genre fiction, gay genre, crime fiction, Mark McNeice is one of the very first books I read, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Gay mysteries. This is kind of weird. I like this. So just need to jump in and say that.
Okay, let me just say it's a Marshall James novel, and in the prologue, it sounds like it's the first of a series. I sent off a missive to Mark asking him whether there were going to be more Marshall James books. I will let you know what his response is next week on the show.
Okay, I'll hold you to that.
Yeah. So this one, the main character, Marshall James, is in his 50s at the beginning and just surviving lung cancer. And he decided to write down the murders that he has been involved in over the years. And this one was in 1983, which, you know, I'm part of Recruiter Tales, and we published a lot of books from 1983. So I'm very familiar with that era. Mm-hmm. And I got to say, having the character now look back and write about 1983 was a slightly different twist. Be that as it may, the book stands and falls on the mystery, and this book stands on the mystery. It talks about this young man who comes out here from, out here being Hollywood, near where you and I both live, comes out to Hollywood from Elkhart, Indiana, starts working in a gay bar. He finds a body in the dumps behind the gay bar, and it is the first of several murders of gay men in the city. And it's a serial killer that the newspapers dub Popper Jack, because all the victims are left with a bottle of poppers.
What's your rating?
Well, the rating...
Or am I jumping ahead?
You're jumping ahead. Well, you're only jumping ahead a little.
Okay, let me back off.
Let's back off. And look, I'll just say, he leaves a lot of clues. The person that looks obvious isn't obvious, and then becomes obvious, then isn't obvious. And by the end, the solution makes a lot of sense. It's very satisfying. There's a little bit of a twist and a turn. And it's got that exciting denouement where he runs into the killer.
So, and then the rating is?
The rating is a glowing recommendation.
It's
better written than a lot of mysteries. And, you know, since it's introduced you to the genre, it gets a glowing recommendation.
It sounds like a great book. It was Murder at Pride Lodge, which I believe is the name of the book that I was more familiar with. But definitely going to jump into this one. And I want to find out if it is the first of a series.
Yeah, Murder at Pride Lodge is the Kyle Callahan book, and that is I think it's a 5-book series, which I read all of when they came out. But he's written a lot of other series, and I'm hoping that this is the start of a new one.
You have some news from us regarding your sleep habits these days.
I got to say, I got a Buffy last week, and I am loving it. I sleep so well. The temperature doesn't change, and I think that was a lot of the reason I woke up in the night. It's been too hot, too cold, and the Buffy, the comforter, solves that. So I can't recommend Buffy highly enough.
I was going to ask, because last week you had just started trying it, and you really loved it. So no changes in mind here.
No changes in mind. And I really like the fact that it's made from eucalyptus, which is far more eco-friendly than cotton. It's got recyclable materials in the filling. There are several companies out there making clothing and bedding items out of recycled materials, and I have found them all to be very high quality, and I like compensating for the number of water bottles I use.
And what can folks do if they want one?
They can go to the link in our show notes, or they can go to the link on our website.
Yep, so just go to www.gaymysteryauthors.com, and you'll see it in our show notes as well as at the bottom of the page. You'll find it there as well. So now that we've had 2 weeks of Justine giving high recommendations to the Buffy, I'm going to break down and buy one.
That's right.
It's
looking forward to it.
It's a no-brainer at this point.
Yeah.
So another thing is Justine happens to be one of the partners at Requeered Tales. Do you want to give a quick Reader's Digest version of what Requeered Tales is?
Requeered Tales is bringing back classic gay fiction one novel at a time. What we do is we find out-of-print books between Stonewall and the 20th century by some of the best writers of the time, and we bring them back as ebooks. And we have about a dozen ebooks out now, and some of them are already out in quality trade paperback. We have 4 out in paperback. So our paperbacks are The Family of Max Desire by Robert Farrow, Onyx by Felice Picano, Steam by J.B. Laws, and Let's Get Criminal by Lev Raphael.
You've been doing mainly ebooks up till now, so I'm sure a lot of people are happy to see that you'd certainly hit the print books.
Yeah, we're looking forward to bringing more print books out.
Well, I wish you well.
Thank you very much. So you're on with your interview, and we'll see you next week.
Interact with other crime fiction fans and authors in our Game Mystery Thriller Suspense Fiction Group on Facebook. Links are on our website, gaymysteryauthors.com.
Our guest today is Marshall Thornton. Marshall writes 2 popular mystery series, the Boys Town Mysteries and the Pink's Video Mysteries. He's won the Lambda Award for Gay Mystery 3 times. His romantic comedy, Femme, was also a 2016 Lambda finalist for Best Gay Romance. Other books include My Favorite Uncle, The Ghost Slept Over, and Mask, the sequel to Femme. He is a member of the Mystery Writers of America. And welcome, Marshall.
Thank you.
How are things in nice, cold Midwest?
Well, chilly and snowy.
Chilly and snowy. Well, it's 75 here in L.A., so I hate to rub your nose into it, but that's why I live here.
Well, that's okay. I had 30 years of it, so it's it's fine.
We may get to that. Why would you choose to go up that way? But we'll see if we have time to get to that part.
Okay.
Before we get started, you have something going on this month.
It's the 10th anniversary of the Boys Town series. I began writing it in November of 2009. And to celebrate that, I've put all of the 12 books on sale for $3.99 for the entire month, the ebooks. Hopefully people will want to buy them.
Well, your Boys Town series has been immensely popular and highly critically acclaimed over the years. And as I just said, rightfully so. Your protagonist in the series is Nick Nowak. Mm-hmm. Tell us about Nick.
Well, when the series begins in 1981, Nick is about 32. He's a former CPD officer who left the force under certain circumstances, which I go into in the first book. He's become a private investigator, and he works in Boys Town.
Without giving too much away, I know it's been 10 years since you began the Nick series, and his time only about a few years have passed, I believe.
About 4.
4 years. Okay. Yeah. Without giving too much away, obviously, which is difficult with mystery novel, how has Nick changed over the years?
Well, writing a character over such a long period of time has been very interesting. And I've certainly looked at what other people have done. One of the things that I've really kept in mind is that I don't want him making the same mistakes. He really is someone who learns from his mistakes and grows and changes. And so he's different now than he was when he began. In addition to having to deal with all of these cases, you know, it's also the early 80s, you know, AIDS, starts off the series in the background and becomes more and more important as the books go by and time passes. And that, of course, had a tremendous impact on everyone during that period. And so that changes him, as well as constantly being confronted by, you know, bits of violence. So he's constantly learning to find new ways to deal with his own issues. And so I think he's become a better person.
We don't always.
No. Well, my experience of people is that good people get better and bad people get worse over time.
There may be some truth to that. Yeah. Now, I know you once lived in Chicago for a number of years. Did you live in the Boys Town area?
For some of it, yes. I moved a lot when I lived in Chicago. I was there from 1980 to about to the end of 1986. And I lived in Edgewater, which I do mention a lot. And I lived in Boys Town on Buckingham, which is a block from where Nick's first apartment is, although his first apartment is actually the apartment I lived in. A lot of the apartments are places I lived or visited. So I lived in that area a couple of times. I lived in Wrigleyville, lived on Marine Drive. So I got around a little bit. And I mean, one of the slight, it's kind of a cheat, Boys Town then really wasn't called Boys Town. I think the first time I heard that term was about maybe 83 or 84. Mostly people called it Newtown. And when they called it Boys Town, it was kind of derisive.
Well, and I'm guessing for those that don't know, Boys Town in Chicago is somewhat the equivalent of the Castro in San Francisco. It's a large, predominantly gay district, correct?
Very, very much so, yes. And I mean, a little bigger, actually. That whole area was very, in the 80s, was very gay. Lots of gay bars, lots of gay businesses, little boutiques, things like that everywhere.
Now, is there a reason you chose Boytown and specifically the middle of the AIDS crisis for the storyline?
Well, you know, they say you're supposed to write what you know. And the way that I've interpreted that is, you know, I write some of what I know. You know, and since I actually never was a private detective or a Chicago police officer, simply writing about the 80s and the neighborhoods that I lived in, you know, those two elements ground me and allow me to get a better feeling of truth and veracity. And the fact that I'm dealing with gay relationships as I remember them and what people had to say about AIDS and things like that. And though sticking with a lot of what I know really helped me. So, and I do find that that's one of the things that people appreciate about the series is they remember similar things.
Yeah, I like the saying, write what you know, because for a beginning writer, it's very true. But if you stick with that, you eventually run out of things to write about.
Yes, if you take it too literally, it can be confining. So it really should be a mix. And certainly, you know, I did know the genre well. I have been a mystery fan for a long time. So that helps. So, and, you know, I also, you know, there came a point in my life, another cliche, which is important, is, you know, life is about who you know. Mm-hmm. And I realized that you can change what you know and you can change who you know. It's like you don't have to be stuck with what you have.
Wise words from Marshall Thornton.
Yes, I'm going for Yoda in my old age.
Well, I got to tell you, one thing I like about Nick, and this is going to sound funny, so you have to hear me out, is Nick enjoys sex.
Yes.
He's non-monogamous at times, sometimes anonymous sex. He even has a regular fuck buddy, at least one that I know of. Mm-hmm. And what I like about this is it's gritty and it's real. Your story takes place in the early 80s. It was a fact of life then and for many still now. And that being said, would you start off the series differently today? Do you think it would be successful?
Well, I have moved away from so much sex in most of my books. Mm-hmm. And even when I do write sex, I'm writing it differently these days. mainly, you know, based on reactions I got. I mean, originally when I started the series, I had a perception of what was going on in the genre at the time that, oh, you just add sex to these stories and people will love it. And that's not entirely what happened then, and it's still not entirely what's happening. So I have really shifted. And I think what was really fortuitous for me and where I lucked out is in writing about the period between 81 and 85, that is a period where people at the beginning were having a lot of sex, and then by 85, they're cooling it.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go through the series, the first several books have a lot of sex, and then it becomes less and less over time. And the one on the final book that I'm writing right now, there is not a sex scene at all, you know? So, and that, I think it works appropriately for the period. And certainly at different times in the series, sex means different things to him. So, and that's part of why it's tapering off and not, I mean, partially, you know, because there were concerns about your own health, but also what does it mean to this particular individual?
Yeah, my experience was similar to yours. When I first started writing, I thought there had to be the sex in there if I was going to sell a book, period. And I was glad when I learned that that isn't necessarily true. I don't have to have a sex scene at the beginning of every chapter to keep people interested.
Yeah, and you know, I've always had mixed feelings about it, too. It's like, part of me is like, well, you know, if you're writing a queer book, maybe there should be sex because that's what makes us different.
Mm-hmm.
So you shouldn't really shy away from it. And all, but and also, you know, they're just stories. Our lives go beyond the bedroom door. So why shouldn't a story? But at the same time, feeling under a requirement to have sex, that's problematic as well. So I kind of go back and forth, and I'm really trying to only write sex scenes when they're absolutely important and necessary.
Yeah, because it's hard to keep up with keeping them fresh. How do you describe the same act over and over again?
Yes, that's another thing I've learned about sex, which is really funny. In real life, if you do something over and over again because it works, that's a great sex life. But in a book,
yep,
you can't do the same thing over and over again because it gets dull.
Plus, just even I read a book recently that made me laugh. I certainly won't give out the name, but they referred to tickling his twig and berries.
Oh,
and yeah. I said, okay, I was actually done with the book at that moment. But, you know, some people try to be creative and come up with something new and fresh, and it doesn't always work.
Yeah, no, I actually, you know, with the Boys Town books, I made a rule early on, you know, he says, cock, prick, dick, and that's about it. Try to vary them, but, you know, he really doesn't ever use, I don't think he ever uses another term. I mean, it didn't seem appropriate to the character.
Right, right.
And, you know, those terms always make me laugh. You know, it's like, well, in The Perils of Praline, I use a lot of those terms because I think they're funny. You know, there I use thunderstick because that's a favorite of mine.
Oh, that's great. Continuing with the sex aspect, I understand you got in a little hot water with some of your readers regarding safe sex or the lack thereof.
Well, younger people, I think, are confused. I did do a lot of research, and safe sex really did not come in until, gosh, I think it was 84. And it really wasn't widely known until 85, 86, you know, that people really started to do it. So what I did to get it in the book as soon as possible was I had one of the characters, you know, who's very involved with Howard Brown, which was the big place in Chicago, go to New York and actually find out about safe sex. Because it began with a pamphlet at the end of 1983 that was being passed around. And so, you know, there is a scene at the end of Boys Town 6 where Nick is handed a condom for the first time. And that, a little early, but... It was close enough. But a lot of people didn't really understand that, you know, safe sex hasn't always been around. And I know that there are writers out there who are putting condoms in books written about the 20s and the 30s, and it's like, well, yeah, gay guys really didn't use condoms.
Well, and, you know, that was one of the complaints I remember hearing about those that complained about Brokeback Mountain, that the two men didn't use condoms. And I'm like,
what? In the 60s? Oh, my God.
It was so absurd.
I started having sex in the 70s, and believe me, no one used a condom.
So your current books that you have of the Boys Town series, of which there are 12, they're all on sale this month for $3.99 each. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. We got to get to book number 13. A lot of people are brokenhearted because what I'm hearing is that number 13 is going to be the last of the Boys Town series.
And it is, yes.
What made you come to that decision?
You know, it just seemed like it was getting to be time, you know, once again, you know, in developing the character, I don't want to repeat too much what I've been doing. So it just felt like things were, when I left Chicago in 86, I felt like I'd done the city. And I think that that's part of what's going on for the series is, you know, he's kind of done the city and we'll see what happens.
And, of course, you can't give details, but can we expect any surprises?
I like surprises.
Okay. Who does it? So there you go. Now, can we expect a new series after your final Boys Town novel?
Yes. Actually, I have two series that I'm planning. I'm planning to launch a new series in the spring, which is set up here in northern Michigan in a mythical county. And the first book in that series is going to be called The Less Than Spectacular Times of Henry Milch. And then I'm planning another series that I've started noodling with possibly later next year, possibly in 2021, which will be set in Long Beach in the 90s. Just as DNA is becoming available and have to do with innocence cases, you know, innocent project type stuff.
So you live in Michigan, and I know at one time you lived in Long Beach. So you like to stick with, as you said, what you know.
Yes, it's really, I mean, actually writing the book, I've written the first book in the Henry Milch series, and it's the first time I've actually been in a place when I'm writing about it. Because, you know, the Pink's books are set in Silver Lake during the period when I lived in Silver Lake. So, you know, but I wrote them up here. So I don't usually write about where I am. So it's like this other series, that's a new thing.
Are you going to continue with the Pink's video series?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good news.
Absolutely.
Those have been highly acclaimed.
Yes, they've been really fun and people really seem to enjoy them. And I have three more in my head right now, and I have no idea how long that series will go.
You've written quite a few standalones and then quite a series as well. Do you have a preference, and if so, why?
Oh, golly. I like series because, this is going to sound so lazy. They're easy in the sense that you know so much about your character by the time you finish the first book. Mm-hmm. Standalones can be more challenging because you don't know as much and they have to feel like a complete experience. Whereas, I mean, a series, you can set it up so that, and you kind of do want to set it up so that there's questions to be answered later on. You know, if you answer all the questions in a series, then why are you writing a series? So do I have a preference? I don't know. I guess probably series.
Series.
Yeah.
Now, I took a look at your Goodreads profile, and you listed Sue Grafton as one of your influences, and she's actually on mine as well. You also listed Joseph Hansen, who is a gay writer, or was a gay writer.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned to me before in the past about Dashiell Hammett.
Right.
What other influences in your writing have there been? What specifically more gay writers have had an influence on you?
Well, I think everyone's also influenced by Michael Nava. Mm-hmm. I mean, his books were wonderful. I read all of those. And I have to do a segue here. It's, in some respects for me, it's a little surreal being on Facebook. Today, Michael Nava liked one of my posts. I posted a picture about a dresser that I am refinishing. Mm-hmm. and Michael Nava liked it. And I was like, this is bizarre. I mean, someone had told me in the 90s when I was reading those books that, you know, that I would actually have interactions like that with him, I probably would have gone, oh my God. And I kind of go that now.
Even writers can go gaga over other writers.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and actually, you know, speaking of Michael Nava, I also like Catherine Forrest. And if you're not familiar with her, you should really read her books. My understanding is that they were good friends and influenced each other. And you can really see that in their work.
I'm writing her down right now.
Yeah. She writes really tight procedurals, which are quite good.
Catherine Forrest. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you started as a script writer, as I understand, correct?
Well, actually, I started when I was a teenager as a playwright. My first real skill was dialogue. And, you know, over the years, I was sort of a theater person for about 10 years, and I started a small theater in Chicago with a bunch of other struggling theater people. And I did that for about a decade. And then that sort of fell apart. And I went back and got a bachelor's in creative writing. And at that point, I wrote, while I was an undergrad, I wrote a ghastly novel that's in a drawer and will stay there. That didn't really go anywhere, of course. So then I went to film school and started writing scripts. And I wrote scripts for about 10 years and had nibbles here and there and won some contests and got some attention. But the problem there was that not so much that I wasn't making money. It was that a film script is actually never finished until it's a movie. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have this drawer full of basically unfinished projects. And that aspect of it got kind of frustrating. And I was like, well, I went back to fiction because I actually wanted to finish things. Now, certainly in the last 10 years, I've learned that things are never quite as finished as they are, as you think. Because, yeah. You have to, then you do audiobooks and then you start looking at them and people tell you, oh, you missed something here and there's a typo over there. And part of me, and I probably will do this at some point, is when I finish the Boys Town books, I will probably eventually take a few months and actually re-edit them and make them perfect.
Perfect.
Yes.
Good luck with that. So when you decided to become an author, how did you come to the decision to write gay mysteries?
Well, I was looking around for what the opportunities were out there, and I found a submission call for gay Christmas erotica, which was an entirely new concept to me, although I later learned that it was not a particularly new concept in 2008. When I heard about it, I was like, okay, well, I think I have to give that a try. And so I wrote my first story and got it published with a small publisher who no longer exists. And that was interesting because, you know, I got a check. And actually, you know, it was, I had published short stories before and you'd get, you know, $50. And that was it. That's all you'd ever get. And so I think my first check was like $125. And I was like, oh, this is good. I should do this more often. And that's when I started thinking about what I wanted to do. And I thought, well, maybe I could write a mystery series. And I wrote the first Boys Town. And then I quickly wrote a second one. And I was originally envisioned it as a series of short stories. But I went to the same publisher and said, you know, this is what I've got. And they said, okay, well, we'll publish it. It's going to take, you know, 12 months. And I was like, why is it going to take so long? And they had a glut of short stories. And so they suggested that I put three together in a volume. And so that's how Boys Town, Three Nick Nowak Mysteries became a book.
And the rest is history. It seemed like it worked out pretty well in the long run.
It did. I mean, certainly, you know, it's changed over time. The stories became novels with Boys Town 4 and have stayed that way. And I changed publishers and then I started doing them on my own. And, you know, it's been an interesting journey. That's for sure.
Well, I'm going to throw a curveball here at you. Who is, do you think is your favorite but underappreciated author or underappreciated novel?
Oh, my God. I think more people should read Joe Keenan. He wrote three fabulous books. The first one's Blue Heaven, and then there are two, maybe just two, Putting on the Ritz. And I think there's a third one. Yeah, there's a third one in that series. They're hysterically funny. He went on to write Frasier.
Oh.
And he's now writing, he's got a cabaret act about Trump in New York. But his books are fabulous. The first one, Blue Heaven, illustrates something that's very interesting. You know, one of the ways to get story ideas is to think about what people say, you know, common things that people say. My ex used to always say, oh, I want to get married for the gifts. He wanted to marry a girl for the gifts. And that is actually the plot. A Blue Heaven. It's this gay guy marries this girl. They get married for the gifts because they're living in New York and they're broke. And that goes downhill from there.
I'm similar to you when it comes to reading with this podcast. Now I'm reading a lot more than I used to, but I do find after writing all day to sit down and read a book is quite a strain on the eyes and a little bit difficult. But that being said, who are you reading now or who was your most recent?
I just read Michael Connelly's latest, The Nightfire. He is also one of my favorite writers. I love his Harry Bosch series. Actually, like most of his series. I love The Lincoln Lawyer. He writes really well. And he writes, interestingly, he writes, one of the fun things about the Bosch series for me is that I always think they're first person, but he's a third person writer. I have to go back and look at them and it's like, am I sure? Because he writes deep third so well that you forget that it's not first person.
That's a good sign.
Yes.
Let's talk about Pink's Videos, the mysteries. That's your newest series as of now. It has a much different tone than Boys Town, much different tone. How has your writing changed over the years?
I don't know. Well, you know, what comes to mind, which is not exactly an answer to your question, when I set out to write a new series, I posed the question to myself, well, what if it's just simply opposite of Boys Town? And so it's an amateur rather than a professional. It's much more of a cozy rather than gritty. The humor is much more deliberate and external rather than Nick's. You know, Nick has a sense of humor, but that's really where the only real comedy comes from, what he's thinking. And it kind of just evolved from there. You know, I wanted to make sure that Noah seemed like someone completely different.
I can tell you from my perspective, I like Noah quite a bit, and I do like the humor that you have in that series. So again, I'm speaking with Marshall Thornton, and he has a special running this month on the Boys Town series. Each individual book's on sale for only $3.99, which is a great deal for his books. Marshall, if they want to buy your book, or reach you specifically, what's the best way to do that?
Well, I have a Facebook fan group, and If people join that, I will give them an audiobook for free. I also have a website, marshallthorntonauthor.com, where you can send me notes if you have something you want to say. And I'm pretty open on Facebook. People contact me on Facebook all the time.
Well, the audiobook is a great deal. What group do they look for if they want to get in on that?
Oh, I think it's Marshall Thornton Author. I mean, if you find me, you know, I can direct you to it.
And I'll also put it in the show notes. That'll help.
Great. Yes, thank you.
No problem. Well, before I let you go, I also have what I used to call questions authors hate. I'm going to soften that a little bit and just say questions that make authors uncomfortable. So okay. I'm going to spin the wheel and we'll see what comes up with you. Okay, so hold on. Okay, here we go. Your easy question. Where do you get your ideas?
Where do I get my ideas? Everywhere, really. I do sometimes read reviews. Sometimes the things that people say actually affect where the books go. Sometimes people will say, oh, the books are going to go in this direction. That's really obvious. And that makes me want to say no. It can't go that way. And so I will actually make changes there.
Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, certainly otherwise, you know, I mean, my ideas come from all the places everybody's ideas come from. You see, I mean, sometimes you even see like a movie and you're like, oh no, it'd be so much better if it was X instead of what they're doing. And then if you start to work with it, you know, pretty soon you've got something that's actually entirely unique.
And that's what makes that a difficult question, is because the answer is usually, I don't know, or it, you know, or it comes from so many places, it's hard to say, you know.
I mean, I think, you know, specific books, I know, like, actually, I do remember with Femme, occasionally I've gotten caught up in internet boondoggles thing, you know, little kerfuffles here or there, and I realized that, you know, sometimes it's better to back off and not get involved that way, and to actually ask yourself if the things that are bothering you are better off in a book. And definitely with Femme, you know, you see a lot about, you know, no fats or femmes on apps and things, and a lot of people saying nasty things about feminine guys and guys who are effeminate. And I thought, you know, this is an interesting thing to write a book about. And so that's, you know, where that came from, that whole idea. And that book, you know, like many of my books, I wrote the first chapter and put it away for almost a year. And then wrote the rest of it in about 6 weeks.
And it did well. Lambda liked it.
Yes, that is a very popular book. And I'm very glad I wrote it. It's probably my most successful standalone.
I was actually about to guess that, because it seems to be the one I hear the most about.
Yes.
Well, Marshall, it has been a pleasure to have you on today.
Thank you.
Look forward to number 13 of the Boys Town series. And I remind everybody to take advantage this month of November to take advantage of his specials on books number 1 through 12.
Thank you.
If you have an idea to help improve the show or would just like to make a comment, go to our website, gaymysteryauthors.com. Click the link for contact. You'll find a number that you can call and leave a message, or you can just fill out the contact form. We look forward to hearing from you.